This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you're wide awake. We'll be sort of, I think, quite delighted when this week's over. I think some of the team who've been putting this whole week together have been working day and night, literally, I would say, for some weeks. So, I think that Friday night at about 11 o'clock, I think that we're all promised a large glass of Chardonnay or something, or something to celebrate what's hopefully been a really important outstanding week for us. I should, of course, welcome all of you. It's not actually my or our conference, but as Apprenticeship Week, there are 150 events going around the country. But in welcoming you, I would like to pick particularly on one table, because whenever you have a wedding or a christening, we say, isn't it wonderful, Aunt Doris came all the way from America, and we've got Susie, who's travelled from France. But we actually have a delegation from Pakistan who've been with us all week. We've been learning a great deal from them on apprentices, so we'd like to particularly welcome our friends and colleagues from Pakistan, from the ministry there in terms of education and skills. What I've been asked to sort of really cover is building apprenticeship opportunities. And I'm going to touch a little bit upon, I guess, what Kevin Brennan said. I think before you look forward into how we build opportunities for the future, I think it is helpful to have a very quick look back into the past. And that looking back into the past is 30 years ago, we were in the top 10 against any other developed economies or any other economies in the world. We were in the top 10 for all three level of skills, low, intermediate, and high. And as you can see, in the last 20, 30 years, not so much that we haven't been doing things ourselves, we have. The reality is that other parts of the world, particularly the BRIC nations that you hear about, Brazil, Russia, India, China, but also other parts of the Far East and other parts of the world have been investing very heavily in the skills of their people. And we've seen a migration, as we all know, of jobs and people from different jurisdictions, different parts of the world, to follow where those skills are. And the one I'm, I guess, most concerned about, and I'll focus on a little bit more in a minute, is the intermediate skills, where we are falling further and further behind if we do nothing, if we just allow the trajectory to carry on. And in terms of what we're doing currently, you'll see that all the plans we have in place today and the things we're doing will improve our position on high-level skills. And that plays very much to our higher education system in this country, where a lot of research goes on in the universities, not least of all, universities such as Warwick, Manchester, Cambridge, Oxford, and so on, where a lot of pre-work, in that sense, goes on around new industries, new opportunities for growth, and so on. But so progress is pretty good, if you like. We're making ground on high-level skills, but on intermediate skills, the technician class, engineers, and so on, we are falling further behind. And if we don't do something pretty radical, we will slip out of the top 20 by 2020. And that has very serious implications for us as an economy, and for the types of jobs that we will have in this country, and the capital that we will attract into the UK from around the world in terms of investment inward, investment capital coming in. And part of that ambition, as you can see, Kevin Brennan talked about the entitlement in 2013, but the ambition we have is to have one in five, 20% of our young people, choosing an apprenticeship route as a mainstream route. And yet, one of the big issues that we face as a National Apprenticeship Service is about changing perceptions, both amongst employers who will turn around and say, well, it's bureaucratic, it's difficult, it's expensive, we've just had a recession, can I really invest in skills? But also from young people themselves and parents whose attitude will be, well, my child's doing pretty well actually at school, so I want them to do A levels and go on to university. And almost an apprenticeship is an admission of failure. And we've really got to do a great deal in this country to put apprenticeships on the same level of accreditation and worthiness as our academic path. So one of the big challenges we face to achieve these ambitions is as much about perception as it is about reality. In terms of, Kevin Brennan covered this, but a quick look back at the past. I sort of talk, I could talk for England actually, but whenever I get into a taxi, I always chat to the taxi driver, and they never say, what do you do? And I say, well, I've just started working. I've spent 30 years in the private sector, And I said, well, I've just started working in the public sector. I said, oh, what are you doing? What? I said, well, I'm sort of working on apprenticeships. They go, blimey, they used to be fantastic, those apprenticeships. We should bring them back. And I'm going, well, they are back. You go, bollocks, yeah, they're not. Yeah, they're miles away and all sorts of stuff. Look at this, fantastic sort of growth. Right from, as Ken Brennan said, just over 10 years ago, 65,000 people started, 240,000 last year. It's virtually quadrupled in terms of volume. But I'll come back to that because I think that's part of our issue about how we grow opportunities in the future. But also, much more importantly, we started tracking completion rates, and Kevin Brennan again referenced this. One in four people who started an apprenticeship 7-8 years ago finished it. And it showed almost a lack of commitment to both the programme, I think, of employers around the pastoral care, the mentoring, and the support that apprentices were given by business, but also probably the quality of the training amongst the provider network. And there's a huge amount of energy and resource has gone to actually building with the sector skills councils and with employers a real focus on getting apprentices through the 18 months, 3 years, depending on the programme, with a really successful outcome at the far end. But actually, I feel I have a really wonderful job because I'm coming in on a really upward trajectory. And bearing in mind, when you look at that 7% growth in total apprenticeship growth on volumes last year, that was in a period of our economic history, which would be looked at as probably one of the worst in the last 100 years, in the last 2 years. So it is an extraordinary, I think, outcome that we've managed to grow apprenticeships and starts and so on, despite that. In terms of sort of where we're going to grow, one of the debates I am having, and this is very, I've got 15 minutes, so I'm going to rattle through. I'd like to spend a lot more time on this because this is quite a crude analysis, really. And I don't want you to take it absolutely literally, but fundamentally, when I talk to the ministers and I report to Ed Balls on the 16 to 18 piece of apprenticeships and to Peter Mandelson, Lord Mandelson, on 19 plus, and we sort of see in some ways that the 16 to 18, I mean, it's very crude, and I'm being very, as said, sort of blunt about this, and it doesn't entirely work, but I just want to make a point that from a policy point of view, there are probably two outcomes that apprenticeships really deliver against. One is social outcomes, and a lot of time I spend with ministers, they talk about, unemployment, NEETs, i.e. those young people who are not in employment, education or training. They talk about the disadvantage in society, how do we get more and more? And they also sometimes, a lot of people see apprenticeships as being a solution to unemployment. And actually, the fundamental driver, from my point of view, why I came to the job, is its fundamental purpose is about building skills in this country, about building our skills competitiveness. You cannot divorce the two between its social outcomes and the economic outcomes, but the fact is, we spend £1 of government money or taxpayers' money, and sometimes the outcome will be more about driving social change than it will be necessarily about economic growth and economic change. And in some ways, I've just listed some of the things under there. I mentioned about growing volume, and what we've done is grown a lot of volume in probably some of the lower skill areas where basic retail, MBQs, hairdressing, call centres and so on. And that's fine because it makes a massive difference to the productivity and efficiency of those businesses, and it transforms the lives of those individuals. But do those apprenticeships fundamentally change the competitiveness of the UK economy regarding skills, particularly intermediate and at those high level? The answer is probably no. So we will continue driving very hard the volumes of these apprenticeship frameworks for the very reason that they're very important to business in terms of their competitiveness, really important to the individuals. But on the other side of this, and they're interconnected, so I'm not divorcing the two, it's not one or the other. They are complementary, but on the other side, what will fundamentally drive apprenticeships in the future, and again, Kevin very much referred to this with a 35,000 increase in level three, a doubling of the volume that we've done in the last year or two. And therefore, on this side, if we are going to really drive the skills in that intermediate class and actually break out of a potential downward spiral of becoming a country of low skills and low pay, rather than high technical skills, attracting high technical jobs and higher pay, we have got to be investing more. NINJ, for those of you who don't know, sorry, it's a nice sort of bit of jargon, it's new industry, new jobs. It was part of the skills strategy. It's really focusing on it. And the analogy I draw with people around this, if someone 20 years ago said to you, unless you were very, and I'm sure you're all very smart, but if someone said to me in 1990, do you know, Simon, by 2010, 500,000 people in the UK will be employed in internet and web-enabled businesses. I go, sorry? What does the internet mean? And they would have tried to explain it to me, or what does the web mean? The fact is, the internet was still almost a sparkle in someone's eye, you know, back in 1990. It was definitely not mainstream. And the real question, this is not about government picking winners. This is a case of saying, well, as the UK, in this country, can we actually compete more effectively in some of these areas, the higher skill areas of job, and therefore attract inward capital? And if you look at that, these are some of the areas. It's not exclusive to these, but it includes things like life science and pharmaceuticals. We've got a real heritage in some of our drug companies. Low carbon renewables, we've got a hell of a challenge ahead of us to actually build a low carbon economy to meet the Copenhagen agreements. Forget about Kyoto of some years ago. We know that there are 4,000 technicians, engineers in the renewables industry today. By 2020, they're going to need 75,000. And part of the problem is the chicken and egg of there are very few businesses in the UK currently in low carbon and renewables, but it's growing exponentially. If they're small businesses, how can they afford to take on an engineer or a technician to train them? Those that have got an engineer in this, who are up on the wind turbines, fixing them and creating new plants and so on, the fact is their engineers are so busy because of the growth of the industry, they don't have time for those engineers to mentor and apprentice and bring them on stream. So one of the things we have to look at is in some of these areas which are real growth and will drive a lot of the innovation in this country, how can we have the skills that enable those industries to really boom and blossom and grow and create, say, 500,000 new jobs into this country by 2020? In terms of one other area, I would say, is that we need to penetrate much more into smaller and medium-sized companies. The reality is that we have, I think, a very high profile amongst, say, the FTSE 250. They have direct access to ministers, to government. They know pretty much that they've got probably quite often teams of people working on government, policy, HR directors, smaller businesses, and some of these industries, you know, renewables, for example, is actually quite a fragmented industry. They're new startups. So we've got to find routes into removing bureaucracy, removing barriers for small, medium-sized companies as we go forward. I'm not going to spend a long time on this because I'm delighted that Rod Kenyon, who's sitting here, Rod represents a group called the Apprenticeship Ambassadors Network. It's a group of about 25 employers, ranging from the very, very large, the BTs, British Gas, Bentley, British Aerospace, right down to, for example, a tailor in Savile Row and some other smaller ones. But they commissioned some research about 2 years ago through Warwick University with the question, we really believe in apprenticeships as employers, that's why we're here as a group, but actually, can we really once and for all prove the business value in the business case? And very simply, the break-even line, as you can sort of see there, the dark blue, if you sort of take it, sorry, there are two on here, very simply, an apprentice, the red line is a level two, so it could be in retail or, as I said, in call centres. The blue line, which is around engineering, the simple fact is in the first few years or first 12 months, 18 months, depending on how long the apprenticeship, the apprentices themselves are obviously less productive than a worker who'd been employed on the same day as them but said, we're just going to train you to do that job for 6 weeks, now get on with it, we'll leave you to it, versus someone who is actually trained on an 18-month, two-year apprenticeship program. They are less productive for the first period of their apprenticeship program. But after that, universally, across six different industries that were reviewed, absolutely, unequivocally, apprentices were 20, 30, 40% more productive than a peer who was not doing an apprenticeship. And Rod, I think, will spend a bit more time on the business case. But what I would say is that is our product. Because whatever we want to do about creating apprenticeship opportunities in the future, if there is not a compelling case for employers in the public and private and public, again, Kevin Brennan mentioned it, we're doing a huge amount of activity in the public sector. The NHS, local authorities, defence are already very good at apprenticeships. There's a whole opportunity for us to transform our workforce from an upping and increasing the skills and making them far more productive. So this underpins every single debate we have with anybody. It's not when we talk to private sector employer about corporate social responsibility. It's about, do you actually want to get 20 to 30% more productivity out of your people? Do you want them to stay longer with your business? Do you want them to be more motivated than anybody else? I don't know a business in the world that would say no to any of that. And that is the key that unlocks the future potential in whatever industry is, large, small, or medium-sized companies. So fundamentally, apprenticeships are about economic growth at a micro level within companies, very specifically within certain industry sectors, and so on. It is about skills, and skills are key to the growth and the future prosperity of the country. It's the number one strategic issue mentioned by business, full stop, even ahead of gaining new capital to invest in their business, ahead of recession, ahead of finding new markets and new clients. It's skills. I mentioned the high-skill, high-pay economy. We cannot compete with other nations in the world in a low-skill, low-pay environment. The cost base fundamentally in this country is too high to ever sustain materially a low-skill, low-pay economy. What we have to trade on is the intellectual property we have in this country, the heritage, as I said, of our higher education and so on, and the technical skills that still are here. 13% of our GDP still comes from manufacturing. It still comes from very many areas of our business and our economy, which are very much at that higher end. And ultimately, this is about, unemployment is, an absolute dirge on society. If we are going to create 500,000 new jobs, that higher end will probably create another 500,000 support jobs, support those higher end technical jobs. So I feel that we have an absolute compulsion to drive the apprenticeship story, to build skills in this country, and to make this country more prosperous and more economically viable in the future for everybody. Thank you very much.